What's the first name? Fraser. Okay. Okay, so this is Fraser Fleming, and this will be our last one, right? For this session.
Okay. Thank you very much. So the outline of my presentation will be in these kind of four broad parts. Firstly, I'm going to be discussing a course that I developed where the idea was to be very invitational in the way that it was presented. So it's got four parts. The first is a little bit about course development. The second part is about how this course was put together and kind of the nuts and bolts of why it was put together like that. The theme that permeates all of that is this invitational mode to engage with the material. And then if I've got time, I'm going to quickly take you through the itinerary. And at this stage, I have kind of a disclosure that I have a conflict of interest because I've just finished writing this book, which you're going to see throughout this, and it's hard to kind of disconnect the two of them because the writing of the book was involved in the way that the course was going to pan out, because that's the way that I did the course itself. So please forgive me, I'm a sinful man. So this course was developed while I was a faculty member at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, which is it's a Spiritan ethos. It's about 10,000 students, so it's a Catholic university. And the reason I say that is because that kind of pans out into the way the course ended up being placed. So initially, I proposed this as a faith and reason theme area course. All students have to do a course of this ilk. And I proposed this with the title, The Emergence of Science in a Religious World. It was approved by the committee, the Faith and Reason Committee. And then it had to be approved by my college. So the structure of the course was that there would be a general overview on science and religion, a focus on cosmology, a section on evolution, a section on history of science, and then a focus on current issues. Because of the nature of the university, I relied very heavily on material from secular institutions. And it may seem a little strange, but you'll come to see why. So heavily on PBS, Nova, BBC, for experts in areas where I was not an expert. I'm an organic chemist, that's my training, and my interest in science and religion is one that I've been pursuing since graduate school. So there are two books for this course. The first one is Science and Religion by Edwin Grant, a really great overview of the early period of science and religion. And the second one was this lesser-known book by Terence Nichols, not the Terry Nichols that you might think of, called The Sacred Cosmos. And the reason is that Terry Nichols was a Catholic priest and taught at St. Paul, Minnesota. When I proposed the course, my colleagues in the college said, this is a great course. We thoroughly endorse the teaching of this course. The only wrinkle is you should not teach it. Or you can teach, but only teach a small portion of chemical evolution. The theology should be taught by somebody in the theology program. The physics should be taught by a cosmologist, and the biology should be taught by somebody in the biology department. And that wasn't the kind of course that I had in mind of being kind of something that was integrated. So I put that on the shelf. I continued with my research, and one of the things I've done is traveled significantly in Europe, and I'm kind of a geek, so I go to science and religion places. And I came back kind of energized. How could I bring this to students? And I decided to try and promote this from a study abroad perspective. So again, the syllabus went off to the Faith and Reason people. They said, we love it. You should be able to introduce it. And before I went and pitched this to my colleagues, I went back to them and asked them, you know, I'm interested in doing this. What are the problems you would have with me teaching this kind of course? And what became apparent, and the reason for this image, is that everybody had their own definition of religion. So their idea of what religion and science is was quite pluralistic. And it became clear to me that the way to make this course fly was to make it be focused on a very broad range of what you define as religion. So the way that it was taught was kind of like a guided inquiry process. There were four sessions in the spring, followed by a two-week study abroad component. This was kind of a regular course. There were three assignments, a capstone assignment, no final exam. It was a writing intensive course. There were journal reflections and journal questions, and the outcomes from this were what you would expect from a course on science and religion. The three books that I used for the course, the first one was the one by Edward Grant. The second was a book by Owen Gingerich, which I hoped was kind of a more of a light-hearted way of understanding the lives of Kepler, Copernicus, and Galileo. And then the last one was the book that I had written. And the reason why the book is important is because the way that the book is constructed, you can see it follows a chronological timeline. So we start with the implications from the Big Bang, then we move to chemical evolution, biological evolution, the evolution of hominids. And what you can see in these titles is that there's always kind of a subtitle. Why is it that people get a little bit concerned with issues of the Big Bang? And I think the answer is because of the issue of purpose. Do we live in a materialist perspective where there can be no purpose, or is there purpose from a theistic perspective? And that permeates each of these chapters. So there's a chapter on Jesus Christ, look at miracles, prayer, the resurrection, the causal joint, brief history of science, neuroscience, and then this collects together a number of themes and then introduces some of the topics that weren't caught that should be in a science and religion course. The reason for adopting this structure is the idea to engage students on the front end in a topic like cosmology that's quite remote from personal view. But as you progress through these chapters, particularly through Jesus Christ, and you end up in neuroscience, where you're asking, who is the real Fraser Fleming? What's inside the wiring, and how does that come out? Now you've moved to being very personal in your perspective. So the idea is to engage students in discussion in the beginning, to get them familiar and willing to engage like that, and to move through so that now it becomes more personal so that they can start to examine their own belief system. And the idea is not to convince them. The idea is to outlay what the issues really are, and so they can kind of decide, does their real worldview really match up with these major issues that really need to be addressed in this science and religion framework. The book itself has a series of discussion questions in it, which I've used and incorporate into the course. These are very open-ended. For example, like this one. Pain provides a biological mechanism for organisms to avoid bodily damage. Would God be good or evil to impart a strong sense of pain into sentient animals? Again, the idea is engagement so that people can explore what their own beliefs are and then kind of compare that against the information that they're getting in the course. The way that I taught this was I would teach three main sections. I would turn up in class. I would give about a 15 or 20 minute overview of the topic. I would then show a video which would lead into discussion. The three videos are listed here. The discussion was in small groups because in small groups people feel much less inhibited to engage in the topic. And I would tell them, you know, I'm going to be a listening ear, I'll come around. I wouldn't make comments, but I would ask questions. So my whole focus is to keep the engagement going. Then we would have kind of a class wrap-up to that discussion. I would introduce the assignment to them, which was basically go away, read this book, answer this assignment, and then we'll meet again in about a month where we'll do the whole thing again. So what were some of these assignments? So let me just go through the first one, which was basically why did science start in the time of Galileo and then move from Italy around Rome up into the northern European states? And the answer I'm looking for is that at the time of Galileo, after he was placed under house arrest, very few scientists wanted to engage in anything that was going to put them under house arrest. So their science became rather inane, but that was not the case in the Scandinavian countries, and particularly in Germany. So my point in asking these kind of assignment questions is, You're not going to be able to get that from Google, right? You're going to have to go away and read the book and kind of figure it out on your own. And if you don't figure it out, come and ask me and I'll give you some help. So again, it's this idea of kind of engagement. The journal reflections and journal questions were of two types. So one type was journal reflections that they wrote in a hardcover book and they actually physically gave to me only. And these were personal questions that they knew only I was going to see. And the evaluation of these was the level of engagement. It wasn't looking for a right or wrong answer. So you can see, for example, the first one, describe your religious beliefs, explain your religious beliefs and say how they affect your daily life. Where do you think science and religion interact? So I'm looking for a thoroughness of what they're telling me. And if they engage with the topic well, then they get full credit. That's really all I'm looking for. The journal questions were quite different. The journal questions were done in the study abroad component. And the idea there was to engage with the material that they're seeing on the road. So you can see that the way that this course is framed is that the content comes before the travel, and then the study abroad travel component connects that together and allows them to experience some of the things firsthand by going to the Galileo Museum, going to Einstein Museum, going to the Vatican, things like that. So here's where we went. It's quite different from most study abroad courses, which usually go to one place and then travel to various points out from that place. So this starts in Rome, goes then to Florence, up to Munich, then to Stuttgart, then to Bern, and finishes at Geneva. The way that the course days were structured is there was a site visit in the morning, usually a large lunch, and then a site visit in the afternoon, and then in the afternoon and evening they had free time that they could choose what to do, and we would give them suggestions on sites that they could go and see. And the only ground rules were that it has to be at least three people traveling together to go out on their own. And most of the travel between these points was by train. So now I'll give you just a rough idea of our itinerary. So Duquesne University is a Catholic university. We would arrive on Sunday morning and then immediately go to Vatican Square, where the Pope has this short service called the Angelus. It's about 25 minutes. He gives an address, usually in two or three different languages. And for a lot of the class, this was kind of like a high point, was to go and hear the Pope. Then we'd go and visit the Vatican. We have guides in most of these places. The one at the Vatican, Liz Lev, is just phenomenal. She's taken through several presidents. She's really outstanding. And I had queued with her the kinds of things that we wanted to see. So when we saw the corridor of the maps, she would tell them, this is the science of the time, where what the Pope is saying to his guests is, we know what is going on with the boundaries of the modern world, how it is being explored. So not only do we have the control of the religious side, we have kind of an understanding and of what's going on in science as well. So these are the kind of connections that we're trying to build with the presenters as we go through. We go to St. Peter's Basilica, of course, and then we also go to the Vatican Observatory. This is actually probably, I think, one of the highlights of the course. So this is Father Dan Brown, who is a member of the Vatican Observatory. So these are Catholic priests who also have PhDs in physics. He studies quasars. And the students get blown away when he tells them, I feel as if I worship God as much in studying quasars as in celebrating Mass. So I can tell them things from a professor's point of view, but until I go there and hear somebody like this, now, especially for people who aren't very religious, and I would say about half the class was not particularly religious, half the class had religious roots, let's say. And I would say the ones who had no religious roots, this was a problem for them. And this created a lot of really interesting discussion that was really great. We go to the Galileo Museum, we go to Santa Croce, where Galileo was buried because the Franciscans embraced him. He was a heretic, remember? So where are you going to bury a heretic? The Franciscan said, he's ours. We'll bury him in Santa Croce. One of the things that transpired, I would say, by providence was one of the assignments was to do with choosing either a scientist or a memorial or a site that we would visit as part of our travel. And the students presented on that topic when we were there. So when we were in the Galileo Museum, there's a very short piece that's devoted to Newton because of the connection between the two. And this was a time when one of the students would get up and give about a 10 or 15 minute summary of Newton, what Newton's beliefs were, how it affected his science, what his science was. That was fantastic. The students really took ownership of this, and it almost became each student wanted to out-compete the last presentation that they got. So we had some fantastic presentations that were all just student-led. We went to Munich. So I was there on sabbatical. There's an English-speaking church in Munich that my wife and I attended while we were there, and so we went to that as well. So for many of them who were Catholic, this was kind of like a different spin on things. There was a person there who's really quite brilliant who gave a lecture beforehand. There was an overview on kind of science and religion. We go to a bunch of museums in Munich. From there we went to Fieldestadt, which is just outside Stuttgart. That's where Kepler was born. And then he went to kind of like the equivalent of grade school. Then we go to Bern, to the Einstein Museum. That's really a fantastic museum for this course because it's in three parts. The first part is to do with his Jewish identity up to when he divorces Mileva. The next third is to do with the physics of Einstein, and the exhibits are fantastic. They make it very accessible. And then the last third is his work for establishing the University of the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and his work for peace. And so the journal question that comes from this is, how does Einstein's Jewish heritage affect his personal life and his science? And the answer is, to do with the science, you could bring in his work for pacifism and for the Hebrew University. And for his personal life, it doesn't. He's a messed up guy. He divorces his wife. He tells her, I'm going to give you the Nobel Prize money so that she will divorce him. And then he marries his cousin. And he tells her, I'm never going to be faithful. And suddenly this icon, the students have to kind of ask themselves, well, what do I believe now? So this is great for the course because it gets them to start to evaluate their presuppositions. Then we go to CERN. We go through the Super Collider. And then we go to this History of Science Museum, which has a number of exhibits, but this one is my favorite because this instrument, you apply electric discharge to both ends, and this is over the whole thing. It looks like the Aurora Borealis, and at the time they developed this great theory about how the Aurora Borealis was generated. It's completely false. And suddenly the students are confronted with science doesn't work by this monolithic progression towards truth. And they can see it right in front of them. Two things that I haven't mentioned, so it's this kind of invitational posture. We would have at least one main meal together, and we would, if appropriate, we would try and inject some discussion questions, either from what we've seen or from the book. These journaling reflections were done typically on the trains as we traveled between cities, and students were encouraged to work together. They had to submit their own journal with their own answer, but we really didn't care how much that was a collective of the group. The idea was to engage in the content. I'm now no longer at Duquesne. I'm at Drexel University in Philly, and I'm trying to put this course together. Same kind of general outline, but in an online framework, using the same kind of invitational posture. So that's kind of the goal of the course. Thank you very much.
Quickly on a few stats, how many students?
So I taught this course twice, first time 17, second time 13.
Okay. What's the cost to the students for all the travel?
So the way that it worked is Duquesne has an unusual model for study abroad. So the cost is the cost for a 3-credit course plus a study abroad fee, and the 3-credit cost plus the study abroad fee is used to cover the cost of the course. And total, it's about 5K, so about half.
That includes the 3 units, too.
That includes.
So the fees, how much of that?
$2,500. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that includes, you know, all accommodation, all entrance fees, all honoraria to the guests, and all travel, including airfare to and from.
Are the 2 weeks of travel after the semester ends or at the very end of the semester?
So it runs from the semester. Spring semester, and then the beginning of the summer, the first 2 weeks. So the first 2 weeks of the summer is the study abroad.
So summer, so after the end of the spring semester.
Correct.
So they're in progress grades until it's over?
Yeah. Yeah, they get an incomplete, and then that transitions to whatever the final grade is. For most of them, you could complete the course before you go. So, yeah, they could actually know what their grade is.
Thank you for, that's quite innovative and very exciting.
Thank you.
One of the pitfalls in a course like this where it's largely discussion based is kind of getting a degree of vulnerability and camaraderie in a group so that actually it works. What kind of techniques do you do to foster that so that, you know, discussions don't fall flat, so you can kind of build and build that group cohesion?
So what we do at these four meetings that we have, so I described three of them, and I'll just describe the fourth one in a minute. When we first meet, I ask everybody to introduce themselves, what's their major field, and why are they signing up for this course? And that's really interesting, because some of them just say, because I want to go to Europe. And that's fine, you know, getting people to be honest and to laugh and engage, that kind of helps. And then I think having these small groups after the video discussion, it's not threatening. They introduce themselves. We mix it up every time. So they meet a different set of people. And that also helps because when we travel, typically we're staying at youth hostels. So I ask them to sign up for who they're going to have in their room. And throughout that spring semester, they've got to know other people in there and they kind of figure out who they want to room with. So that helps to set that camaraderie as well. I should say that the fourth session that we have, my wife is a co-instructor. She does all the logistics. You can imagine this is a nightmare to try and coordinate. We arrive somewhere. We've got the local travel. We've got to get the honoraria to the person. We've got to figure out where we're having a meal. We've got to get the students their tickets for their entrances. So I can focus on kind of the teaching. So the last session, she comes in actually with a suitcase and she empties it out and she says, well, you know, you're going to be lifting this onto the trains. You don't want it more than about 30 pounds. This is what you should take. You should leave your hairdryer at home. You should take good walking shoes. We're going to be going to churches, so you want something that covers your knees. These kind of practical things. That also tends to break down the barriers because it's very practical kind of stuff and everybody appreciates it. And some of the times what's happened is that that there was one person who really had difficulty lifting these up and somebody said, hey, I'll help you all the time. We'll kind of partner on that. So those kind of things, I think, helped to build that camaraderie.
Other questions?
How do you think it's going to work as an online course? It seems like this is a very interrelational type of
thing. Yeah. So the reason it's online is because I need the enrollment, and Drexel has a co-op program. So to get people to sign up with a problem with scheduling, that's why it's going to go online. I'm going to use a chat room format to have these discussions using these same kind of questions. And then I can't make the students have a face-to-face, but I'm going to encourage them to have a one-time face-to-face before we leave, where we'll do some of this. You know, this is what's going to happen, and these are some of the sites that you're going to go to.
Also, you're not giving up. You are doing the travel.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll do the same kind of thing. The teaching will come up front, and then we will travel after they've got the content. One of the really interesting things that happened, so my wife would kind of give them the logistics of what's going to happen every day, and then she'd say, These are some of the sites that we recommend that you go and see. And when we were in Munich, one of the sites we recommended the last time was Dachau. And almost all the students went, and when they came back, they said, this should be a requirement. Everybody should have to go to this. So that was really fascinating. What we saw also was that when we turned up in a city, the students would kind of coalesce around a couple of groups. There were the ones who wanted to see the nightlife, and there were the ones that wanted to see kind of the sites that were available. And they would tend to go off in two fairly large groups and go and engage in these sites. So much so that when we were in Florence, a group of them went off to the Uffizi, which is a fantastic art gallery, and one of them did an impromptu presentation about Leonardo da Vinci because that was his person. So it was really quite cool to see how they really engaged the material.
What's your sense for the faith journey of the students of the two segments you've had?
Yeah, so the last journaling question was, explain how this has maybe changed your view of science and religion. Some of those were really interesting. People move from having an antagonistic view of science and religion to seeing both how they intersected with each other and informed each other, and to know some of the big questions. Now, I can't tell you that there are any conversions, and that wasn't really the aim of the course. The aim of the course is to make it invitational to think about, do you have good coherence? What I can say is that one young lady decided that rather than going into medicine in particular, she wanted to go into neuroscience because of kind of the mind-brain-faith portion of it. So that was pretty cool to see.
How many days is the trip?
Total of 15.
Any other questions? All right, this is, there's one more science and teaching breakout like this tomorrow afternoon, and Tom Furco is the monitor for that. So hope you've enjoyed these to this point. Let's thank our speakers.